Indian MD, U.S. entrepreneur, and now Wharton MBA student. Meet Dr. Akshat Kumar, member of Wharton's class of 2019. Welcome to the 242nd episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target school and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Our guest today, Dr. Akshat Kumar, earned his MD from Kasturba Medical College in India and completed his residency in internal medicine at Rutgers University, St. Peter's University Hospital in New Jersey, where he became, ultimately, chief resident and then attending physician. On the side, while a resident, he co-founded thewisemd.com and later joined WellU Health as Business Development Lead and Chief Medical Officer. Today, he is an attending physician at Penn Medicine and a Wharton MBA student. Akshat, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you, Linda. It is my pleasure.
Great. Thank you again for joining us. Can you give us a little bit of your backstory, your background, where you grew up, what you were doing before joining Wharton?
Yes, sure. So I'm originally from Delhi, India, and I used to be a math nerd in school. And so none of my friends expected me to really get into medical school. They expected me to do something more in math, finance. But I wanted to use my problem solving to help people. So that's what made me go to medical school. And you talked about Kasturba Medical School. And that was 6 years of intense training. So that was great. And then after that, I got the chance in my final years of med school to work in some U.S. hospitals in Boston and in Rochester. So those experiences really motivated me to pursue further education in the U.S. And so that's why I moved to U.S. 5-6 years back to pursue my residency training and then further work as you outlined earlier.
All right. Thanks. Now, you mentioned that you did, I guess, some rotations while in medical school in the U.S. and then you applied and got into a U.S. residency. It's very difficult to get into a U.S. residency as an international medical graduate. How did you do it?
So the two paths to it. Like, one is what everybody knows, you know, giving the USMLE steps, step one, step two, you know, and doing some training in the U.S. And I was lucky to get some rotations at Mayo and Harvard. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a part that as an international medical graduate, people know about. There's one more thing that I did not realize then and that now I realize, especially after coming to Wharton, is the power of networking. Mm-hmm. In medicine, sometimes we feel that, it's not as ill set. Like, you know more people, especially when you're training, because there's so much focus on academic rigor and knowing the subject. So one more, coming from an outside country to U.S. and having recruited IMGs myself as chief resident, mm-hmm. it really helps when you know people who can vouch for your work. And so that is one part of the equation that I sometimes see some IMGs miss. But of course, we have to give it's a very structured and regulated process. So we have to give all the exams and do well on those as well.
So it's the exams and it's the networking. It's having somebody in the U.S. who can vouch for your work. So really getting those rotations in the U.S. was critical to your success. Am I right?
Yes. I mean, I did well on the exams. And
yes.
Actually, I ignored the piece of, even if I did the work, there's a tendency as an international medical graduate to not, I'm here at Wharton and here now they teach us in a very formal setting the power of networking and how to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
So now, looking back, I just hope that I had these skills then and I could have, used them. It's not a, my point is not a negative thing. There's this mindset thing that it may be negative to ask for help in these things, but it's mostly about not asking for a favor. It's more about, working with somebody, proving your work to them and then asking them to vouch for you. It's a difficult thing to do because you're coming from another country. There's a difference in culture and everything. But it becomes when you're in the recruit on the other side of the table, it becomes much easier when somebody tells you, there's so many applicants that it just becomes easier to recruit people who somebody strongly backs because you know who to hold accountable if something goes wrong.
Makes sense. Can you give a couple of examples of how the practice of medicine is different in the U.S. than in India?
Yeah, great question. So I
assume you have lots of examples, but just a couple.
I mean, I will start with the positive. When I was in final year of medical school, I worked at Mayo Clinic and Harvard, Brigham's Hospital. And so that was what motivated me to come to the U.S. in the first place, the power of academic medicine, you know, the level of research which is happening here, especially in these institutes. You know, like if you want to be in academic medicine and research, there's no other place arguably better than U.S. And that's what attracts many physicians to the U.S. But now, over the last 5 years, having practiced as a physician, there are some negative parts to it as well. Like, for example, if I walk into the emergency room to see a patient, I already have a lot of data with me. I already have their CAT scans, their blood work. It's good. Like, I have more data to work with. At the same time, that can lead to less use of bedside clinical medicine skills. Uh-huh. So I'm a big believer of the traditional medicine. You have to really work hard in the U.S., especially in the U.S., on your clinical skills and keep them alive and not depend too much on technology, because that you can always do. So that's one difference. The other difference from a business standpoint, I was in India, when you see a patient there, mostly, everybody knows the cost of care. But here, because the insurance companies are paying for it, the cost transparency was one more thing, which was very surprising to me having practiced in India before coming here.
Right. How has your experience as an entrepreneur, both at the WiseMD, and which you co-founded, and at WellU Health, influenced your decision to join the healthcare management program at Wharton and to get the MBA?
Yes. So WiseMD was actually the direct consequence of this realization of difference in cost transparency. Like, there was this incident when I fractured my wrist, and I knew mm-hmm. that it was like this specific type of fracture, and it required this treatment, but there was no way for me to know the cost of an X-ray versus an MRI, even as a doctor in my own hospital. Mm-hmm. So that led to the idea about cost transparency at the point of care for physicians to help them make better decisions, not to punish them, but as a motivation for them. It was quite exciting, and it was a great idea. I was able to get physicians buy-in, which was a tough part of it. But it also made me realize that ideas are not good enough. Like, thinking of exciting things, that in itself is not good. You have to back it up with a solid business model. Mm-hmm. So it made me, it was one of the things that made me realize the power of business. Same with WellU Health. WellU Health was not that early stage. It had some staff, it had some revenue, but still, to scale an early stage startup to that level, it really needs an understanding of how it is done. And so both these experiences made me appreciate in a very deep way the power of business, not only the science part of it, but also the language. You need to learn to speak the language that business people are speaking when they're doing these things. So that, in a way, indirectly relates to why I ultimately decided to come to Wharton, because it made me view this as a skill set that I need to acquire.
I interviewed a few weeks ago for episode 232. Dr. Peter Pronovost and Dr. Chris Myers from Johns Hopkins. And they actually feel that the soft skills of management, so they're not talking accounting and, spreadsheets and that stuff like that. They're talking more negotiations, communications, leadership, should be taught in medical school. I found it to be I think I actually told you about this, a fascinating podcast. Anyway, it's not just that it's for mm-hmm. doctors who happen to want to start a business. It can be useful for physicians practicing medicine with their patients. But let's go back to the...
Just to build on that, I cannot agree more with that sentiment. There's this thought, I don't necessarily say that I agree with that. If you're a physician, I have a lot of respect, and I'm a physician myself, and I have a lot of respect for the skill sets that we develop while in training. But these additional skills, if we have formal ways to get them, it can help us more efficiently lead healthcare organizations, and healthcare is 19% of the GDP.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been some recent papers, like not recent, like over the last few years, about lack of physician leadership in U.S. healthcare, and how that is a very good thing. Like how, if physicians learn these skills and if they decide to lead, that they tend to do better because they have been through the system. It's easier for them to lead having been gone through the process. So learning those skills in a formal way can have a positive impact on how effectively 19% of our GDP is run.
Okay. All right. Let's turn to your experience as a physician applicant, a physician MBA applicant. What did you find most difficult in the MBA application process? So you're now a practicing physician. You also have entrepreneurial experience. What was the hardest part of it for you?
The hardest part for me was just believing that it is the right path forward for me, because I'd already trained, done my residency. So it's different before residency and after residency because you have a secure income, you have a clear path forward. And, it's not only me, like many people say, there is this resistance of the value of MBA. Like, why do you need MBA in the first place? You know, you can learn most of that stuff online. And so those kind of very sensible arguments. And just to keep on believing that you really need this training and education or skill set, but it's a long process. You have to give the GMAT, you have to network, you have to apply to different schools, write the essays and all that. But if you do not very strongly believe that it's the right path for you, and you just stick to that belief even through tough times, and that's what helps me the most, and that was actually the biggest challenge to keep that belief alive through this process.
Okay. How did you nurture that belief? Was it just a matter of kind of shoving away the doubts, or did you do something more specifically to keep it alive, to keep the flame burning?
Yes, great question. I think so. It's not only just about, you know, like thinking in your head that you have this belief and it's not like all fluff or like just in your head thing. Yeah. It's very important as you're going through this process that you do meaningful things. Like you don't do things just for the sake of getting into business school. And I know it sounds easier to say that now, but it's not good to hear when you're on the other side. I'm completely aware of that sentiment, but to keep that belief alive, to keep that flame alive, you really have to feel that, for me, the flame was, the reason was that throughout, from my training in India to my experiences in the US, to my startups in New Jersey, that the bottlenecks in medicine are not clinical, that the problems we face are really business related, that I love the mission that I'm serving as a physician, and I still do that to date, but the systems we work in are counterintuitive to that mission. So I strongly felt that. And so the more I worked in my hospital in different capacities, the more leadership opportunities I got in my hospital, and the more, like, the startups, the two startups that you mentioned, WiseMD and Value Health,
mm-hmm.
So they all reinforce that belief. So I could see it happening on the ground that, you know, there is a need for physicians to get more leadership training, to get more business training. And personally, for me, it felt the right path forward. So you just cannot sit in a room and think that that's your belief. You have to really do something on the ground and have that. And then, you know, it becomes easier. Your essays become easier. Your interviews become easier once you are doing that.
Okay. Now, speaking of the interviews, how did you handle the Wharton TBD? What, if anything, did you find difficult about it?
Yes. I mean, I think it was interesting. I mean, it's a slightly different environment. I think it can also depend a lot on the group that you get.
Right.
I was lucky to have a group that could connect with is easier. So that's the unfortunate part of it. It is in some ways dependent on the group. But at the same time, it's a skill set that you actually need even while you're in business school. Like, I've through my first 4 months of Wharton, there's so many team projects that has required a same level of teamwork and a collaboration spirit, which that tests. So I think that way it's good that it's testing the things that we actually need in the business school, but at the same time, it can be dependent on the group.
Right. Okay. Now you mentioned the team projects at the many team projects at Wharton. What do you like best so far? I think you've completed the first semester at this point. What do you like best so far about the Wharton MBA program?
Oh yes, I'm absolutely loving it. I mean, that just goes back to I keep on like thinking about all those months when I was, you know, I had this doubt whether I should apply or not apply, or is full time MBA the right thing for me? And I'm absolutely loving it. You know, I start with you know, the level of opportunity, like in all spheres. I mean, you can just do random things all the time. But for me, coming from my background, the biggest value add and the thing that I've been loving the most is the ACAD, like the core business subjects. It's learning subjects like economics, finance, you know, like some of our friends, some of my closest friends here, you know, for them, that is not much of a value add, but they've already done those things in their previous work experience. But in medicine, we really don't get exposed to these subjects at all. So learning those subjects and just learning the language of business through those subjects has been the biggest value add. Specifically, in addition to Wharton, I mean, like the batch size, it was slightly daunting, the 800 plus batch size. But you know, like there are around 60 people from India. So I've been in US for 6 years, but my long-term goal is to go back to India and do something in healthcare there. So to have that network of people, even in my home country, come here and meet them, you know, if they're only like, for example, a smaller school will have 300, 400 people, so there will be lesser number of people from any given country. So the bigger school size, in a way, has the potential to open more doors because you have a bigger network to work with.
Great. Okay. Your enthusiasm for the Wharton MBA program comes through loud and clear, but I assume there are some things that could be improved. What, in your mind, could be improved at Wharton?
I think it relates to the same thing that at the beginning, it can be a bit daunting, like 800 plus people. Mm-hmm. You know, like you have this, I had this mindset that when I will get in, everything will be easy. And that's not really the case. I mean, everything is still competitive and you're not competing with the best from all around the world. So it's great that you're getting exposed to so much talent. At the same time, it is competitive. So like sometimes you may not get the courses you want or may not get the project you want. So mm-hmm. I think what has helped me in that, if you really know what you want to do and having that thought process, like what you want to get out of it, can help you prioritize. And then once you know what you want to do, you will be able to compete more effectively. So that is the only part that comes with the law school, that it can be a bit competitive, more competitive, even after coming in.
What's a typical day like? Not on vacation, when you're in class. What's a typical day like for you? Or what was it like first semester?
Oh, yeah. So there are classes here like from 9 in the morning to 5. Then you have lunch breaks. But the lunch breaks are from 12 to 2. And then there's always some event going on. So once you like wake up at 7 or 8 in the morning, you're back to back. You're just going through classes and the lunch. And everything, which was very new for me, is calendar driven. Like, everything was Google Calendar, because otherwise you just lose track of the thousand of things you're doing in a day. And then even after 5, I play tennis and squash here. So you go and play those sports. There is one club or the other event at night. So I've never been this busy, even in residency. I mean,
wow.
And it's a challenge. I mean, because people who suddenly enter business school and your friends are like, you know, you did residency before, but how come you're so busy now? You're just in school. But it's not only the coursework, it's the thousands of activities outside of the core classes that just keep you super busy.
Any feedback on the healthcare management program at Wharton, which I assume was a main attraction for you?
Oh, yes. So to go back to your earlier question, that would be the best part about Wharton MBA program for me. It was the thing that attracted me to Wharton to begin with. It's a class size of 80 students. The best part is that healthcare has many components to it. It's not only hospitals and doctors. It's also pharmaceuticals, the insurance companies, biotech firms, small startups, the finance part, how to finance healthcare ventures. But these 80 students are very carefully selected, and they represent, like truly represent, the vast breadth of U.S. healthcare system. So there's a even if we had no classes together, you know, just having these 80 people together in one, you know, as part of one group has a lot of power, because I have learned most from these other 80 people about the U.S. healthcare. It has helped me get a view on the U.S. healthcare system, which I never had before. And, you know, I'm very conscious of the fact that I'm still a physician, that I really need to be rooted in that. But at the same time, there are some thought process, like, which is outside the physician community, that is, which I was very, very important for me to understand. Like, how do pharmaceutical companies think about doctors or hospital networks? How do insurance companies think about it? You know, what is in it for them? What are their big concerns and big worries? So why are they not happy? You know, so to have that sensitivity to different components can, you know, is a huge value add in the long run to meaningful impact on U.S. healthcare system.
Okay. And you are slightly older than most MBA students. Was it hard for you to return to student life?
No, I mean, it's, yeah, that's true. But I think for me, it has not been hard. I mean, because in a way, medicine, you're always, I was not that far away from residency.
That's what
training.
I was thinking.
Yeah, and the medicine training is long, and but it has some advantages also being older, because my average age, I was always the youngest in medicine, and now I'm the oldest. I still cannot believe that has happened to me. But the advantage is that you know your priorities better. I mean, some of my younger friends, that they, I don't have to worry about some of the things that they worry about. So, and it's it helps you to prioritize things better, just with the perspective of time. Because everything is so busy, there with all these millions of activities happening, that if you have that perspective of time to help you prioritize better, so it's only an advantage.
Okay. And now you're, the first semester is pretty much set for Wharton MBA students. What are your plans? Obviously, you're going to be in the healthcare management program, so I guess that's determining your direction. But what are your plans for after graduation? What would you like to do?
Yes, it's an interesting question. I mean, I was not sure about this from the beginning, but just being here at Wharton, speaking to different people, has made me excited about consulting. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking to, because I mean, I see it as an opportunity to defer, like as a platform to get more skill sets across industries, and also as a platform to make to scale up my impact, to get that 50,000 view of different industries. I feel that healthcare has a lot to learn from other industries, so it also gives you that opportunity. So I've become very, almost like passionate about consulting. You know, I know all the cliches around consulting. I'm fully aware of that, and my wife will vouch. You know, like she also still is not sure if that's the right path for me, but I've become very excited about the opportunities it has. My long-term goal is to go back to India and make an impact in healthcare there. And so that's the advantage of the global consulting firm, that you can always use that as a platform to even do work globally, not only in the U.S.
True, true. That's absolutely true. It's a fantastic foundation, really, for business training. Do you have any tips for MBA applicants? Any tips specifically for the many MBA applicants in India?
Yes. I mean, because I was in the U.S., so I mean, that was a part of the, I'm not aware of the specific challenges that they face as I'm aware of the challenges that residents face coming to the U.S. But one thing that I think, which I mentioned earlier, is it's a long process. It's critically important that in this process, that you really do work that you like, that you want to do, that is making you learn things. Even if you get in like this, even for now, for me, I've benefited a lot from my experience at Value Health and as chief resident.
Mm-hmm.
So business school experience wouldn't have been the same without those experiences. So I think sometimes in there, you know, there's, obviously, because you want to, and you have this end goal, you can lose track of what's happening now. And so it's really important to invest in things that you really want to do, not just for the sake of the end goal, but because that in itself will not only help you with the end goal, but also will shape your perspective and position you better once you are here.
Okay. Is there, thank you. Is there anything you would have liked me to ask that I haven't asked?
No, that's mostly it. I mean, I think the one a point that I want to just highlight is about this transition from medicine to business. And there are many, it's not easy, but I've made that transition. And with all humility, it's not easy because the worlds are so different. But, you know, I cannot, and I'm very conscious of the fact that it's, you know, like I'm critical of my thought process as well, and that may not be for everybody. But if you have that flame, or if you have that thought, or if you have that desire, anybody, you know, is even thinking about it, from my experience, I can just, you know, absolutely vouch that it was completely worth it making this transition. And then not only in terms of just value add, but just a lot of fun. And in terms of long-term career path, so there's a lot of opportunity once you have made this transition. So just don't be afraid to make that leap.
Okay. And it is a leap. And congratulations on having made it so successfully and to a school like Wharton. Akshat, I think we're just about finished. Where can listeners find you online if they have follow-up questions or if they want to learn more about what you're doing?
Yes, sure. For the startup, Value Health, the website is there, valuehealth.com. My profile would be on LinkedIn, which I think we can share with this podcast. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you again. And we'll link to Akshat's LinkedIn profile as well as WellU Health, along with some resources related to this podcast from exhibit.com/242. Listener, thank you too for joining Dr. Akshat Kumar and me for Admission Straight Talk's 242nd episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk and will also help your friends get accepted. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.